decided to do our first white paper. So it's not just the first podcasting now, but it's also the first white paper.
Welcome back to Place Brand Leaders, the interview podcast of the Place Brand Observer. I'm Florian Käfer, and in this podcast, I introduce you to some of the world's leading placemakers, reputation gurus, and community champions. I'm interested in how they tick, what inspires them, and how they help their city, region, or country attract visitors, investors, or talent. We also discuss some of the topics which are the most urgent and most relevant for place branders and makers right now, be it sustainability, how to respond to the climate emergency, or how to measure the success of place branding, and much more. Before we continue with today's show, let me introduce you to Alex Vladimirov. He's my co-host and the producer of this podcast. For this second episode, he interviews me about a white paper which we recently published on placebrandobserver.com. In the white paper, some of the world's leading place brand specialists share 10 tips for destination branders, marketers, and managers on how to resume tourism sustainably, where to put the priorities, and which pitfalls to avoid after the pandemic. I hope you enjoy our conversation as much as I did, and of course, I'd love to hear your feedback. A big thank you to our subscribers and partners for trusting the Place Brand Observer and for making this podcast possible. You want to know more about nation brand evaluation, country reputation, or how to attract talent and investors to your city? Visit the business profiles of Brand Finance, Future Place Leadership, and other specialists in our directory, all on placebrandobserver.com.
To do our first white paper. So it's not just the first podcasting now, but it's also the first white paper. And in a way, I mean, everybody does a white paper. So there's so many white papers and webinars, and I think we are probably all a little bit fed up by it right now. But on the other hand, the topic is so important. You know.
And I've had a look, and I've picked up some quotes, some things that interest me, and I'll ask you what you think about them, even if they're not your own, if that's okay, and you were involved with the whole white paper. So I guess a first obvious one for me was I noticed something that I had seen, I think for the first time, mentioned by, was it Copenhagen back in the day? They talked about temporary locals, but there is a very clear call to this becoming the norm that when you travel, you should go and try to be a temporary citizen. If you can just basically take me past this, because it sounds good, right? As soon as I said it, I remember when I was working in town management, as soon as I said it to my team, it immediately had grabs, so it sounds good. But what's behind that?
Well, behind that is Airbnb and the shared economy and live like a local. Mm-hmm. Eat at the places where the locals eat and work where they work and go to the park where they sit for lunch break. And of course, it's great in theory, but in practice, it disrupts communities like nothing else, because all of a sudden you have temporary locals, but they are temporary. So some of them are maybe there 3 days, others are there a week. In a good case, maybe they're there for a month or two if they're like real digital nomads. But so what is happening? Of course, the shops will cater to those who often they have a bit more money to spend as well. If they come from richer earning countries or they get a salary from their home country and then they live in a country which is comparatively affordable to live in. So the locals, I think at the beginning, the locals found it really cool. Like it felt like cosmopolitan, and then they started to realize, okay, my rent is going up 20%. What's happening? Or this neighbor is gone, and now there is some rent apartment there, but it's weird because every 2 days people walk in and out, and sometimes they're loud, and sometimes they're maybe not that respectful. I think we've moved on from that. That was like a couple of years ago. That was the hope, and I think we've achieved that. You know, the temporary locals thing and integrating tourists really into the communities, but to an extent which is just not sustainable, like socially not sustainable and economically neither, and environmentally, well, depending on how those visitors behave, then maybe not so much either.
Because that's something I actually want to ask, not in the capacity of someone that's, you know, learning about the field, but like personally, because in my head now, after that, that was one of the last hopes. And now when I go and think, okay, then how can I travel? How can I travel? Like, should it be just zero and that's it? Like, I'm gone. I'm originally from another country. Is there any recommendation from the paper that you can bring in to update that?
I think you just need to be a responsible local. So not just a responsible tourist, but a responsible temporary local, and really do your research why you are going to a specific place and what might be okay there and what not, and what is your impact by visiting. So are you actually doing harm to the communities? I mean, earlier with ecotourism, we talked about doing harm to the environment a lot. So don't live, only leave your footprints, don't leave your litter, things like that. And now we have that with the communities and social sustainability, which is becoming very important now. And it will be interesting to see. I think Airbnb-like offers will continue to be popular because I use them. You probably use them. And I prefer it so much to also when I go to a conference to staying in a hotel. But this is changing a little bit as well now, because I have the feeling that it has the Airbnb style has matured. You know, now the hosts are they're not really hosts anymore. They're more managers of vacation space. And often you don't have those same conversations or interactions anymore that we had at the beginning. So, and hotels are becoming cooler. So if you think about 25 hours hotels in Europe, they're really cool places to be. So they're more becoming they're bringing the living room into the hotel or the meeting places into the hotel. So you have sort of a feeling you would have in an Airbnb, but you are in a hotel. And of course, by being in the hotel, you are more sustainable because there's economies of scale. So there's all the tourists are together in one place. And so you can group it a bit more. And yeah, so it will be interesting to see where this ends.
I would have never thought about it that way. I would have never thought that a hotel just by the size is more sustainable just because you're managing things in one place. Okay.
I mean, you can control resource consumption. For example, hotels have control over water consumption to a certain degree, washing. You know, you always have those signs of to reuse the towels at the very basic level. But also you can just use smart technology in hotels, in new hotels especially. And so people eat there, you can take care of food waste, avoid plastic and things like that. So it's just much easier to manage in a hotel, and you don't disturb the community as much. If you think about 100 people staying in a hotel, well, imagine 50 apartments around town being occupied by the same people. So the impact on the locals, on the neighbors is very different.
Right, that makes sense. And it makes me think about one of the other quotes that interested me, and I think that one was from Martin Boyson from For the Love of Place. He was on one of the previous episodes that I recorded with him. So I did see that he was proposing something I had actually never thought about, which probably it's more towards the Airbnb side. So I think, let me just read it, that he thinks that there is an opportunity in labeling accommodations and attractions. Actually, so it's probably just not Airbnbs, it will be hotels as well. So labeling accommodations and attractions based on their ecological footprint and their local economic footprint. If the system behind such labeling is secure enough, the application of the system might be required by law. And in some places, the level of tourism tax could even be differentiated because, based on the label category. Now, obviously, that's implying regulation. And when we're talking about place branding, a lot of the times it comes from, you know, the private sector. Obviously, there's private partnerships that do it, but it tends to be driven by the private sector. And all of a sudden now we're saying actually some regulation is a good idea. And that specific one, what are your thoughts?
I mean, it's good to have regulations in place, but they're worthless if you cannot follow up on them, if you cannot control them. And of course, regulation also can produce additional headache to small businesses. So you really have to be careful about that. And sustainability is quite complex. I mean, Martin is totally right to ask for more focus on economic, like local economy impact and social sustainability. But how do you measure it? And how do you measure it in a way that it goes beyond your municipality or region and is also applicable to other cities or even other countries? And we have hundreds of labels in the tourism area about quality, about sustainability. And you might have heard about the Global Sustainable Tourism Council. So this is an organization, nonprofit, and all they do is they try to put light into this jungle of certifications and labels. So they check them, and then they, if they comply with the minimum standard, then they give them their seal of approval, sort of. But this is usually a national scheme, so it's not even on a local level. And then, I mean, Airbnb, it came out of nowhere almost, and then it was one of the most valued companies in the world a couple of years later. And so I think the way the economy works now is it's much, much faster than regulation works. So it will be really, really difficult for regulators who need maybe a couple of years and rounds of approval to get anything done. And then you have elections in the way, and then you start from zero. And so, yeah, it's tricky. I think consumers and travelers and shift of mindset, you know, might be an easier way. But then again, some people care about things and others don't. So
yeah,
it's not easy. But Martin is right that we should try to do something. And the online travel agencies like Booking.com or Airbnb, they should sort of do something. But even for them, it's difficult to follow up because they cannot verify. Like, just imagine that, like, Airbnb apartment owners have to fill a form, something, they send it to the company for approval, and then, well, you'd have to send someone to actually check if it's true, and it's really complicated. Even though, I mean, probably one of the best examples of checking on Airbnb specifically is Barcelona, and they really have like police-like controllers, so they try to determine where are the illegal Airbnb apartments, because you need a license to run one. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, I mean, it's easy to get around it, or to close one, open another.
Yeah. Okay, so do you think then, if it stays within the realm of branding, marketing and comms, we're more likely to just see some stamps that are kind of driven by, well, this is greener of some sort? Yeah, that's probably as far as it can go, but it sounds like a good idea. I don't know, you haven't come across any example of someone actually trying to put another law in place, because obviously Barcelona does strict policing, but any sort of regulation that's middle of the road,
I think, you know, and that's where place branding starts. So it's the combination of deciding what you want to stand for, what do you want to be known for, and if a destination, like a good example is Slovenia, a country, wants to be known for being green in the sense of environmentally friendly and good to the earth and the environment and the communities. And they have done a lot of things to really earn their reputation for being a green country. So they also developed, so Tourism Slovenia also developed a label for operators within Slovenia. So companies and destinations can apply for it. And then they go through a certification process, quality control, because sustainability is about quality at the end of the day, and health and safety, just long-term and not just short-term. And so I think they're a really good example of someone who walks the talk. And they do a lot of work internally, so they don't focus only on promoting the country as a green destination, but they really try to help the businesses and the destinations within Slovenia to achieve this goal and to see where they can improve.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And it makes me think about something you've got in the paper as well. So obviously, if sustainability is going to become kind of a quality mark, you know, positioning about higher quality, and in the white paper, there is, you know, the recommendation to avoid being a slave to volume. But at the same time, if you're just relying on high value premium visitors, then that could be exclusionary, or it could result in what you mentioned earlier, kind of the gentrification of areas. How would you square that circle?
You cannot. it's just impossible. And we are human beings, and communities are groups of human beings, and we'll always just have to face the mess and try to figure out how to do the best we can. We will never be perfect. And you cannot, because of course you're right, and there are some who rightly claim that traveling is a right. You know, others say no, it's a privilege. It's probably something in between. So yes, it is a right in the sense of that everybody should have the freedom to travel, but then again, it's a privilege because you're having an impact on communities and the environment. So you have to think about that. And not that many people think about it. So we do need regulation and restrictions, and making a destination premium focused, of course, is a restriction. So you just, like in Switzerland, there's many communities where people from poorer countries could not, just not afford to stay there overnight. So with hotel prices of, I don't know, 200-300 euros a night, which is not that uncommon here. So it is a premium destination, but it also helps to keep it sort of clean and green. But then again, we have all the Asian middle class who are now coming, and I mean, population is growing. So even if you're premium, you can be overcrowded and overrun just the same. So it's tricky. And I think place branding has an opportunity here, because it connects the promotion, the marketing with the place making, you know, the policy making. And the only chance we have is to bring all the stakeholders together to around the table and to think about, okay, what's in the interest of all of us, or most of us? So how can we develop the destination further? Do we build a resort? Do we build chalets? Do we build high-rise hotels, theme parks, or not? But of course, politics play a big role there, and money, so investors, depending what they want. But yeah, it's a very interesting topic, and I think the white paper has some good ideas about it, like avoiding the overcrowding.
Yeah.
But of course, every destination is different. So what works in one place probably doesn't work in another. It's just the way it is.
Okay. Well, that's the bit that really interested me from the white paper. Unless there's something that you really want to draw out that is good examples from it.
I think the white paper has so much good stuff on it. The one thing people could maybe take away from it is to really focus on sustainability. So use this moment now where everybody is sort of also more interested in working together, maybe you know, for crisis management or recovery, use this time now to really think about, okay, how do we envision our place to our destination to be in 5 years or 10 years? And just maybe even just implement things, you know, placemaking or build new theme paths or whatever it takes to stay attractive. Because now there's less visitors, there might be less visitors. And so keep an eye on the long term, I think is really important. Then communicate well internally. I mean, I have the white paper in front of me right now, just going through the top 10 pieces of advice that we put on the third page at the front. And it's really this, even reading it now again. So don't just communicate externally, though marketing, addressing potential visitors, really engage with your businesses and locals. Because at the end of the day, they are the place, they are the experience that people come to pay for.
Thanks for listening to Place Brand Leaders, the podcast of the Place Brand Observer. I'm Florian Käfer, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have feedback on today's show, email me, florian@placebrandobserver.com. I'd love to hear from you. Join me again next time for more place branding stories, interviews, and insights from industry pros. You'd like to get the most of the Place Brand Observer? Join our premium program for full access to all stories on placebrandobserver.com and much more.